Chief Executive of the Analytics Institute of Ireland, and you're very welcome to our podcast series, Data Leaders. In these podcasts, I chat with some of the most important and influential people in the data analytics area in Ireland, and I try to find out a little bit about the people and personalities behind the careers. I also want to explore their philosophy in relation to data and analytics in general, and also find out a little bit about where they think the industry is going in the future. I hope you enjoy this series of interviews, and if you do, please subscribe. Thank you. So good morning, everybody. This is Lorcan Malone here, Chief Executive of the Analytics Institute, and you're very welcome to our podcast. I'm with Circa Healy this morning, and Circa is Principal Engineer and Lead Data Scientist with McAfee, very interesting organization. Good morning, Circa.
Morning, Lorcan. It's great to be here.
Thank you, and it's great to have you, and thank you very much for giving up your time. As with our other podcast interviews to date, it's interesting times, and I've tended to start our conversations by just reflecting a little bit about what's happening, because it's so historic. It's good for the record just to, you know, when we listen back to this, maybe later we'll remember what these times have been like. How are things going with McAfee, and I assume you guys are all working from home at the moment?
Yeah, the bulk of our staff are working remotely all around the world. You know, as an IT company, it kind of suits us, and we may not be we're definitely not as impacted as so many Irish and global businesses out there, and we're definitely cognizant of that, and we're very close to our customer base, and we have a big sales team here in Ireland, and they'd be very close to their customers and feeling their pain. Yeah. But you know, being a security company, we do have some great strengths in supporting remote working. And we are very much reaching out to our customers to support them with webinars and such in that area. We're also trying to support them very much in terms of, you know, opportunistic threat actors that may be targeting them at this time. And because obviously your security posture changes when your customer base are moving outside of your normal corporate infrastructure. So, we are a very customer-focused company.
It is a threat, isn't it? With people working from home, I assume they're a little bit more vulnerable potentially.
Absolutely, because, you know, this is not normal times, and, you know, nobody's home is set up to be a corporate environment. We're very much focused on trying to ensure that our customers stay safe at this point in time.
Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about, I suppose we all know the name McAfee from the software that would potentially be on our desktops, but can you tell me a little bit more about the company and what you do? And then maybe, Sirky, can tell me a little bit about your role in the company then.
McAfee came to Cork, I think, about 15 years ago. Initially, they located not far from where we are now, and they changed offices once or twice. But since that time, the office has grown across the spectrum of activities, very much supported by, the IDA and such. Very heavily focused on research and development, and some really high quality engineering roles there, a really great sales office, and an awful lot of the global roles would be fulfilled in a spectrum of various global activities. Most of them would happen in Cork. We have a great culture. We were recognised this year at IT at Cork as best multinational and best you know, corporate and social responsibility. We reach out to the community an awful lot. We have some great people who do online safety for kids, work with the Gardaí, work with Feroiga. So that's a fantastic community activity. Has reached hundreds of thousands of children at this point in time.
That's great.
Oh, fantastic culture to work with.
How many people are working there, Circuit?
There are several hundred people in the Cork office.
Wow.
So I think that's roughly split evenly between engineering and some of the sales roles. So, like I said, some very high quality jobs.
And is that an EMEA reach that you have, or is it global?
So my role would be part of a global team.
Right.
So there are some roles that are indeed global, and there are some that are EMEA focused.
Right. Okay. All right. Yeah. No, you just a lot of Irish. Irish-based multinationals just focus on EMEA, so it's interesting that you're actually doing global work. Okay, and I assume it's all about antivirus, attacks from phishing, etc. That's, I assume, your entire focus of your organization, yeah?
We have a spectrum of cybersecurity activities. So one of our newest taglines is from cloud to device security company. So we secure everything from personal mobile phone devices right up to cloud infrastructure. And we have specialist engineers that work in all of those areas. And we have specialist salespeople that work very closely with our customers to help them get the best technology for them, you know, that meets their needs. So, right. Like I said, we're very customer focused.
Right. Okay. And do you see, am I wrong in thinking that there's been more attacks or attempts recently than in the past? Whether I'm just reading about it more or whatever, but it just seems to me we're inundated. Are criminals taking advantage of the situation at the moment?
Yeah, if you follow our chief scientist, a gentleman called Raj Samani, or our advanced threat research team, they've been running a series of webinars, and they are tweeting regularly on some of these activities. There have been notable in the media phishing campaigns. There's what we call typo squatting, where people will put up a website that looks like a health company, or purport to be giving information, draw people into poor links, harvest people's credentials. So there is a lot of that kind of opportunistic activity going on related to personal protective equipment supply, information regarding to COVID. And we are very proactively, it's one of the roles that I do, that I am involved with, is trying to harvest that data through various analytical techniques, and to get that information back into our back end and into our products to stop these opportunistic people from impacting our customers.
It's getting quite sophisticated. I got one of these texts yesterday, and I had to do a double think. I was saying, why is Bank of Ireland texting me looking for information? You know, but it looked like my worry would be, we're talking a lot about the over 70s and cocooning and all that sort of stuff, but those that are not tech savvy would be very easily misled by this stuff, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a challenge at this point in time. I have to say, I have to applaud on Garda Síochána, who have been proactively posting on Facebook and in the media about such things. It's been fantastic to see how reactive the public service has been in dealing with some of these issues. Of course, it's always a challenge. to reach out to, you know, those who are not as ensconced with or as familiar with technology. Apart from people like ourselves who would, you know, we have a web service where we would block, you know, access to some of these links. But, you know, the PR processes of people like the Gardaí and the, you know, the media have been very good in this area, I think.
Yeah. I think the banks have been pretty good as well. I notice, you know, I bank online and I there's always a message up there saying beware, you know, and it does kind of slowly sink in to trusting souls like myself eventually that we have to be a bit more cautious. Can you tell me a little bit, Circa, about your role as a data scientist within the organization and what you and your team typically work on? So I just want to understand kind of how a data scientist approaches something like cybersecurity.
Okay, so primarily the sources of data that I work on come from what's called Global Threat Intelligence Cloud. It is a cloud service that supports all of those. You remember I said the cloud device to cloud security company. So all of these devices rely on our cloud service to a degree, to different degrees, to bring the latest and greatest threat information to their device in as close to real time as possible. My team's role is working with this immense amount of data. We get somewhere between 60 and 100 billion hits per day from our customer requests asking for information. We have approximately a billion different, what we would call sensors, across the globe, that are taking questions from these devices, asking in the cloud and getting responses. And that kind of coverage, it enables us, coming back to my role and my team's role, someone has to take that huge volume of information and sift it down into things that really matter. And to discover those new adaptive threats and bring that analytics back into the back end and into the products. And so that's what we do in, you know, it's very kind of a 1,000-foot view, but it's like digging in a sand dune or more or worse.
Wow. So, I mean, it's incredible to think of that level of data, Circa. I mean, how do you handle something like that? Or how do your process work? I mean, I don't understand. A billion pieces of data coming to you on a daily basis.
Oh, billions. So a billion sensors, but like billions and billions of pieces of data. And I am so fortunate. I work with the greatest and best big data tools in the business.
Right.
The unique part of, I suppose, of what I do is that there's a lot of data scientists work with reasonably small data, and they can read it in from a database and pull it into a Python notebook and turn it around a bit. But I and my team, we work with big data tools where there's a lot of what we call extract, transform, load processes that need to be done, various data munging that has to be done, you know, transformation, feature extraction, and then to try and, in an almost continually learning environment, to take that data and build kind of models on a more, an artificial intelligence on a kind of live basis. And that's where the state of the art is really moving to now. It's not like pull a few data sets onto your box and, you know, train a model and, you know, put it out and it'll be fine, you know, for whatever. it's all now about integrated continual environments and monitoring for things like we call feature drift, you know, A/B pipelines, like continuous integration and development of artificial intelligence on a continually deployed basis. So that's really exciting.
Yeah, I was about to say that, Circa. It sounds like because the threats are getting more and more sophisticated and advanced, you guys have to keep ahead of the curve. You must be learning constantly, are you?
Yeah, so when I really moved into the kind of the cloud data munging tools about, I suppose it was about, it was a few years ago, I started to realize that they weren't publishing books quickly enough to cover this area. And, you know, literally as soon as some of the big data providers were pushing out new technology, you know, I had to learn it myself from doing rather than by reading or by training. And I guess that's, in my company, that's what a principal engineer is. They're a person who takes the unknown and learns it and uses it to bring out the best outcomes for our customers without someone telling them how to do it. So it's, you know, really being at the coal face, deep in the data, deep in the tools, and deep in the stack. It's just, oh, I love my job.
You do, don't you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, you know, to be self-actualized at that level is brilliant in any job. And it's rare enough, you know, isn't it? I mean, most people, I think, certainly I've had a long career, but I'd say looking back on most of it, it's you know, you're doing your job, you're doing it the best you can. But there's only small moments in time when you're really fully and absolutely, you know, completely fulfilled by your role, which sounds like you are having one of those moments at the moment, Circa. So congratulations on that. Have you a big team? Is there many of you?
I'm one of about, there are, my team is part of a bigger kind of global innovation team, and so there's a kind of small group of us in Cork, and there's a similar size group in the US, so like we're not hundreds, we're kind of in the tens, I would say.
Well, you know, there's no organizations that have hundreds of data scientists. I don't think, Circa, and the threats that you're facing, they're very, you know, to my mind, as somebody who's outside this industry, the cybersecurity industry completely, the whole thing is a bit vague to me. In terms of who are the people who are actually coming up with these sophisticated attacks, are they coming from a particular part of the world? Are these people professionals? Are they professional IT? Or is it, you know, a bunch of, I have a vision in my mind of a bunch of kids who've come out of, you know, computer games and gone into hacking, or is that, or where, what are we facing with these attacks?
So this is not really my particular area of expertise. Yeah. However, I do work very closely with our advanced threat research team, who are specialists in this regard. Raj Samani would do an awful lot of work with this. And he publishes a lot of work online on this. And from what I'm following on him recently, it is clear that, you know, ransomware as a service and malware as a service, they are very, very big industries in, you know, the black economy. And so it is not a case that malware these days are random events of something that happens, you know, almost like COVID onto your machine. People, you may have heard, for example, in the news recently about a man who was arrested for I think it was the German government he was conning into buying 15 million euros worth of PPE that didn't exist. These people are very clever, and they are mining your information through things like spear phishing, waterhole attacks. They're learning about your organization. They are what we call targeting their attacks to steal or to influence you to connect on that link, transfer that money to a different account, that kind of activity. And they're extremely sophisticated industries. I have to say I'm just so full in awe of people like Raj and his team, Christian Beek, who go out and they really like are so hands-on with our customers in making sure that they're not impacted, and they're at the absolute cutting edge of you know being so close to you know what's going on on the dark web. And yeah, amazing people. So amazed by them.
No, it's great. It's great. And these people who are creating these threats, I mean, there's nothing fun about it. These are disgusting people doing horrible stuff, you know, cleaning out people's bank accounts, you know, the vulnerable, the less educated, the less tech savvy. It's dreadful, you know, so it's great to see that the good guys are so good. Norka, just I suppose taking a step back for a minute, it's while things are improving, it's still not that many strong female leaders kind of in the data analytics area. Certainly I've been enthused to see huge improvements over the last 3 or 4 years, but it's still rare enough to have people, females leading big teams of data scientists. And I'm just interested, therefore, in your career to date, Circa. How did you get into the area? What interested you about it? And how has your career developed?
So, originally, I was a computational physicist. I have been interested in mathematics all my life. I've always loved numbers. I wanted a PhD for whenever I could ever remember.
Right.
And so I always knew that I wanted to do maths, but I didn't want to do number theory. And so if I wanted to do maths, that solved real problems. So when I was coming out of university, that was, you know, undergrad, that was a bit of a challenge, like, at that time.
What did you do at undergrad level, Circa?
So I, Alan Joyce, who you know, who runs Qantas, I did a course called Applied Sciences in the Dublin Institute of Technology, right, which was a fantastic course because not only did it cover maths and physics and computer science, but it also had things like management studies and a language and, you know, very hands-on, very practically focused and everything. It was great culture. Love that course. It allowed me to have both really high quality mathematics but also a foot in kind of engineering culture, which has kind of really stood to me ever since. I was fortunate at the time that the award was made from Trinity College, so I had the benefit of the engineering culture but also the high quality award and high quality teaching, because the teaching was obviously validated by Trinity, I'm sure. I know DIT still have fantastic teaching, fantastic institution, and I'm immensely proud to have come out of there. But then I went on, so I was looking for something to do with my mathematics, and I ended up, so I spent 2 years in UCD doing mathematical physics and theoretical physics. And so there was a lot of that was like stuff like differential geometry and general relativity and stuff like that. And that was okay.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, it's very niche. So I went looking for a PhD, and I happened upon a kind of growing area of the application of quantum mechanics and computational modeling to material science. And I moved to Cork to join a group of a gentleman called Stephen Fahey, Professor Stephen Fahey from UCC. And I undertook a study of silicon surfaces for my PhD, modeling silicon surfaces and the mechanisms by which molecules would bind or unbind from the surface. And so I spent 3 years doing that, had a baby along the way, then I was really fortunate. At the time I was finishing my PhD, Science Foundation Ireland had just started, and they had recruited another gentleman called Owen O'Reilly from University of Surrey. And Owen is now chief scientist in the Tyndall Institute in Cork.
Yeah.
And he was designing next generation photonic materials. And photonic materials are everything from lasers, LEDs, communications devices. So it was taking new exciting materials and using computational techniques to design the light structures that would be most efficient for telecommunications as going forward. So to this day, some of my work is being used in what we call VCSELs, communications lasers.
Wow.
So I was there for about 7 years.
Cool.
And so then I guess, you know,
was that your PhD? Was that?
No, that was my postdoc. I was seven years postdoc in Tyndall. And that was a kind of fantastic engineering experience, because I was bringing my mathematics to the design of real materials to a place that could grow those materials and package them up into real devices and put them out into technology, and all from the mathematics of quantum mechanics and materials. So there's nothing like the buzz of predicting something and providing a kind of chart of this is how this is going to look. And then somebody grows it and does the experiment and it matches, and it's such a buzz.
Yeah, look, the whole area, I mean, quantum just fascinates me. I know nothing about it, right? Nothing in any great depth or whatever. But it's just an area that I think is going to fundamentally change how everything works, I assume. Am I right in thinking that?
Yeah, so I was really fortunate recently that I work in the group of our chief technology officer, Steve Roman, and he's been doing some analysis and research in the area of like quantum cryptography. I've had the kind of privilege of being able to contribute a little towards some of his PR activities and some of his speeches on that, to be able to go back and use my physics. Because as we move towards quantum computing, you know, there is the danger that a lot of our current encryption algorithms are going to be able to be broken.
Through quantum, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. Because it behaves completely differently, am I right?
Well, it's because you can kind of brute force all permutations at once.
Yes. Yes.
You know, to an exponential degree. And
no limitations, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, yeah, you can run all experiments at once. You just, yeah. So it's fantastic stuff. And it's mind blowing. And, you know, a really good book I read kind of preparing to dig into that particular area was The Code Book by Simon Singh. And he was discussing that it appears that throughout history, for example, the Crimea War, that, for example, the British had already broken the cryptography of some of their opponents at that time. And, of course, this wasn't promoted. So even though it wasn't published or whatever, it's quite likely, even at this point in time, that there are people out there who have broken algorithms that we think are secure. So we're not going to know when people start to break these algorithms. So, I mean, that was a recent thrust of one of Steve Grobman's talks, was that we have to think now about how to secure for the future. We are, it's like kind of digital archaeology, you know. When in the future will all our current encrypted work not be encrypted anymore?
Yeah. And it's, you know, I think COVID-19 has taught us as a global community that things that it isn't right just to put your head in the sand and say these things will never happen. You know, now something really major has happened in the world, something completely life-changing. So it's like we would have dismissed these threats maybe in the past, but now we have to start thinking about these things really seriously. I think that's certainly something that I reflect on at the moment, that I certainly, you know, would have seen one of these movies about a potential disaster. I think, that'll never happen. Damn it, it has happened.
You know? I know. It is like living in a movie, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? You know, and it just makes me think, yes, quantum computing, I mean, applied to algorithms, applied to security algorithms, absolutely could blow them apart. Yeah. So just going back to your career, Circus, so you did your 7 years postdoc in Tyndall, and how did you end up in McAfee then?
So I guess I was 7 years in Tyndall and I had young children, and I was finding the academic thrust of things, one, a bit uncertain, and two, you know, I'm pretty competitive by nature, and with young kids, it's, you know, kind of difficult to compete with those people who can like work 80 hours and hang out in a lab. And so I was offered a position in the Revenue Commissioners. So I spent 4 years there, and I learned so much about...
They have super bright people there, don't they?
Oh, they are the... Yeah. Really, I think the public service has no idea of the quality of IT skills, mathematics skills, and analysis skills that exist in the Revenue Commissioners. They are... Yeah. A gold mine of information and expertise.
We've done an event with them before. They spoke at one of our events in Dublin Castle, and I was just blown away. These people, very humble, very, you know, with not like the big job titles you might see in the private sector. You know, there might be something that very modest, and then they come on stage and they're absolutely phenomenal.
Oh, and I learned so much business analytics skills there. Yeah. I learned all kinds of database joining, volumetric analysis, Lean Six Sigma, process mapping, project management. Just amazing amount of stuff. Yeah. And again, loads and loads of data on, you know, you could be like, tracking payments or whatever, you know, and human behavioral data, which I love, stuff like, you know, which county had the most income taxpayers, you know, that kind of thing, you know, fascinating human seasonality and stuff. So there was nothing like it.
Yeah.
And so I suppose, how did I leave Revenue? Well, I suppose, being a very curious type of person, I was always, you know, I'm always up for a challenge, and a kind of a new capability came along where you can take a career break from the civil service and go and work in another company. And you didn't used to be able to do that. So I took a 3-year career break, and I applied for a job as a statistician for the Global Threat Intelligence. To my surprise, but because, you know, McAfee is an amazing culture of thinkers outside the box, they took on this computational physicist come public analyst, right, and transformed me into an artificial intelligence expert with big data. And so, yeah, I've been there 6 years now. I have an amazing team. I work with fantastic engineers globally. And every day is learning something new. It's just
great,
never ending.
Fantastic. Well, listen, wrapping up, we're coming to the end of our time. It's been really fascinating, Circa. I think we might have to have longer chats about some of this stuff, because I genuinely find it fascinating. Just looking to the future, I mean, we blag on a lot in the Institute about, you know, how analytics has become much more central to organizations, and which is great, and looking at things like AI and stuff and emerging tech. But I think there's less people who are at the kind of cutting edge like you guys are. Where do you see everything going next? I know it's a very broad question, but do you see analytics AI becoming increasingly important? Do you see the technology changing? Do you see a merger of all these techs into one practice or science? What do you think?
I can see a kind of split happening between machine learning engineering and kind of analysis. Machine learning engineering is a really growing field where, you know, you really need specialist data transformers. And it's a really specialist kind of architecture role. So that's one thing I see very much emerging. Of course, the public cloud is growing in terms of tool set. You know, data moving back and forward between different clouds, as I would see as a kind of big thing. I'm excited by the whole area of ML operationalization and tool sets around that. You know, kind of moving from more fiddling around in your car and pushing it out to kind of like really driving AI like a racetrack. That's a really kind of where stuff is really going. Explainability is quite a theme at the moment. So there's a lot of analytics tools like deep learning and such that almost seem like black boxes. And there's a lot of trend out there in making that much more explainable, particularly, you know, with things like GDPR and such, customers much more want to know the reason for decisions, and that's always a challenge when, you know, with artificial intelligence, so many permutations of features are involved in making a decision, to try and explain to people. Yeah, there's a big trend in that too.
I'm struck also by the times we're living in that, you know, everybody's looking at graphs now, everybody's looking at trends, everybody's trying to do predictive analysis. You know, and that, you know, every newspaper, every TV news program is showing graphically I suppose the journey that we're on in terms of the infection rates globally. It's interesting, isn't it? I wonder, will analytics of that kind of analytics, will it become more commonplace? And are we, and I suppose another question, are we asking enough of it? I worry that there's no single view coming out about COVID-19. We still haven't kind of answered that question about getting a kind of single view of what's happening globally. There's so much dispute about data.
Yeah, I mean, it does bring to the surface quality issues. And a really good thing is there has been a lot of discussion about that. You know, how do you count deaths? How do you count cases? Are people testing enough?
And the politicization of data as well, the politicization of information and how it's manipulated, you know. Saw Mr. Trump there saying, you know, I think it was yesterday, congratulating themselves on, you know, the numbers, and it's phenomenal. You see sort of 65,000 or whatever it is, people dead in the US, and he's kind of making it out to be a great success story. And if you don't know enough about stuff, you could easily buy into that story.
Yeah, well, another big theme of our chief technology officer has been, for example, you know, the safety around voting processes and such in the US. Yeah. And Steve is very much talking at the moment about how, and it's something we went with in Ireland many years ago, if you remember, about how the safest process is the paper one. And so I'm so glad that we were ahead of the curve here and not bringing those voting boxes online. And we still do it by paper, which is fantastic. It's great security for our democracy. Yeah. There's nothing like a good tally activity, Lorcan.
Yeah. Data scientists love all that stuff. You know, let it last 9 days. The 18 count and belly go backwards. You know, it's great fun. Yeah.
If you're very lucky, they might do it all again in the summer.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, God forbid. But it's interesting. We live in interesting times. Sirka, listen, it's been great talking to you. I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much. You're working in a really fascinating area. And I think I genuinely hope, and I think you will be an inspiration to lots of young people, and maybe young women in particular, who are interested in getting into the area. It's fantastic to see you doing so well and being a thought leader in the area. And thank you very much for your time, and I wish you every success moving forward.
And I wish you every success going forward now, Lorcan. I hope that you manage to progress your fantastic webinars and such. Thank you so much for having me today.
Not at all. Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to hear more from other data leaders, please subscribe below.